Right, boys, heads on. This is the one. I want plenty of chat out there. Luke, if something comes along, I want an opinion. Don't be afraid to chuck it out there. James, plenty of satire out of you, mate. And Pete, you have a good one. Okay, come on! Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Marcus Speller Show, otherwise known as the Football Ramble. James is here.
Hi.
Or Jim.
Or that.
Pete's here.
Hey, what's going on, you dicks?
And Luke is here.
Alright.
Gentlemen, what is your favourite England kit of all time?
I'm going to jump in with the Italian 90 kit, just because it's just got so many memories embedded in that for me. And it was quite a nice kit as well. It had that sort of half shiny, half not shiny appeal. It was good. It's like a shiny sticker. Which, you know,
I think that was the first kit when all the tracksuits came out as well. It was shell suits.
Shell suits, yeah.
And loads of people had market jobs. My mate got punched in the face for saying to one of the hard kids at our school that he had a market job tracksuit on that wasn't a real Umbro one, and he got punched for it.
Oh, no.
You know.
With good cause, by the sounds of things, Luke.
Bringing my kit down.
No, but it is a good kit. That's probably the first one I'll properly remember.
In fact, I'm going to give you the points for that, James. Cheers. That is the right answer. Mm. But Pete.
Well, I would have gone for the Italian 91. Or, of course, when they moved the. I don't know, it was a few years after where they moved the badge into the middle
Euro
of the
96.
Chest.
Yeah,
was that Euro 96?
Yeah.
That blew my mind. Imagine the arrogance. It's not supposed to go on the middle of the chest, it's supposed to go over the nipple where it can serrate a nipple.
I didn't like that. I preferred it where it was.
Yeah, right. I think it should have stayed there as well.
But your favourite kit, Luke?
The Brooking one, 1982, with the
stripes.
I was too young to remember at the time, but but it's a magnificent kit. We look back on it. It's synonymous with Keegan and Brooking.
Yeah,
very much so.
An England kit I like, and I think people might not realise, we had a third kit back in the day. In 1990, or a year or two before, we had a third kit, and it was a sky blue.
Oh, I remember that.
Yeah. I remember Shearer. Shearer still wore it.
That was a bit later than that. That wasn't that around the sort of time of the Umbro Trophy, the Umbro Cup, with the score against Brazil.
I think there was another one there, but the third kit that I'm particularly referencing is that one, and the 1970 Bobby Moore one.
Oh, right, okay, yeah.
Very sort of plain classic.
I like the new one as well. It's got a sort of nice classic look.
I really like the new one as well.
Yeah, it's a bit like a cricket shirt, but...
What's the general opinion? Have you read anything about it, what people think of it? Because I actually really like it.
I like it as well.
All I've heard is good things.
That influenced the opening question.
Good things.
Did it? Is that where you got it from, Marcus?
Yeah.
But do you boys remember, you were saying about the 1970s kit. Do you not think how difficult it would have been to play in one of those shirts?
Which shirt?
Well, the early, 50s and 60s ones. They're, heavy, really heavy cotton.
Well, everything was heavier, though, wasn't it? Like, the boots were made of concrete and the balls were made of more concrete.
The players were fatter as well.
I was going to say the players were heavier.
Yeah.
But the pressure and expectation wasn't, James.
No.
Leveled out.
Yeah. You know.
Even itself out, didn't it?
Exactly.
There was no telly back in the 40s and stuff, so people didn't watch it anyway.
No colour anywhere, it was all black and white.
Those were the days, eh?
Yeah. There was no telly. Like that. Lads, remember, there was no telly. Everyone remember.
Mm. But now there is telly, and that's my link to the PFA Awards.
That barely counts.
No. Yeah, but it does count, though. Manchester United players are dominating the award nominations.
Yeah.
I'll read them out to you. Rio Ferdinand, Man United. Steven Gerrard, Liverpool. The spanner in the works, you might say.
Ryan the scouter Giggs, in the works.
Well, Ryan Giggs, Cristiano Ronaldo, Edwin van der Sar, Nemanja Vidic.
It's all United players apart from Gerrard.
Is this the first you've heard of this? Yeah, it's ludicrous. I mean,
I think
van der Sar's probably in there because he had that amazing run of clean sheets, but it was something like an average of two shots a game he had to deal with then. And Ryan Giggs, although people have been going, he's been brilliant, he should get player of the year, it's all just nostalgic sort of nonsense, really.
I disagree with that. Do you want that one?
Ryan Giggs is a fantastic player, but he's only started about seven games this season. I'm not sure if it's even that.
Over to Luke.
He has the most assists for Man United by a distance.
Really?
This season. Yeah, he's got 30. He's got three goals and 13 or 14 assists, which is four or five more than the next best player.
Put that in your pipe and smoke it.
I will. I don't smoke, but I might start.
Having said that, I do, James, you are right. I do think that there's a bit of nostalgia because he's never won it, has he?
No.
He's never won it.
Never won it, no.
Ronaldo as well. I mean, he's not even a you shouldn't compare him to last season, but he's not by any means having the same sort of season. He looks visibly sort of uncomfortable.
I'm surprised Ronaldo's in there.
No, I think that's a real problem. I think Vidic has had a better season than a lot of them.
Vidic is a favourite.
Why are you surprised that Ronaldo's in it? You're not seriously surprised, are you? Of course he's going to be in it.
Yeah,
everyone thinks he's the best player in the world.
Yeah, but it's just the nature of this list. I mean, is it March where the players vote? I mean, still
have people got this confused with red, like MUTV's player of the season?
Yeah.
Steven Gerrard just slipped in there.
Yeah.
I think that it's no surprise that it's dominated by United players, given they're obviously top of the league. But that is a bit heavy. It's a bit Man United heavy.
Why is David Nugent not in there?
I think Stephen Ireland deserves
an
a
easy reason.
Shout.
Yeah.
Oh, well, I think we'll move on to Stephen Ireland in a minute, James.
Yes,
because he's in the nominations for the PFA Young Player of the Year.
Oh, with David Nugent?
No.
Oh, right.
the Nuge hasn't made it this year.
Nuge.
But there's always next year.
Yeah, exactly. Nuge.
Always next year.
He's probably the only player in the Premier League with a 100% international scoring record, so that speaks for itself.
Yeah, probably. Not definitely, though.
Wow.
I think Vidic, you know, everyone said he's the forerunner. I think he's got to win it, hasn't he?
But it's just been magnificent. Yeah, this season, no doubt about that.
It'd be interesting to see.
Apart from that one game where he had an absolute mare.
Yeah. Well, he's been sent off twice against Liverpool, isn't he? Which would probably go against him if, you know, the voting hadn't been in March.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
PFA Young Player of the Year awards. Awards, just the one.
Any of us made that?
not anymore. Agbonlahor, Hall, Rafael da Silva, Johnny Evans, Stephen Ireland, Aaron Young. Aaron Young.
That's
an amalgamation between Ashley Young and Aaron Lennon.
You can't do that. That's cheating.
Well, Harry Redknapp.
Of course,
has.
He's going to win.
What about Fellaini? Where's Fellaini?
Yeah, Fellaini's brilliant.
He's
great.
He's just a good player. He's not that bad. He's only young still.
And he's got really fun hair.
I'd like to see Ashley Young.
Well, Agbonlahor's top scorer for Villa, I think.
Agbonlahor had a real dry spell, though, didn't he? It was about 15 games he went, I think, with that scoring goal.
He gets booed by his own fans.
That's
as
just
well.
Ridiculous.
I'd like to see Ashley Young win that, personally.
Yeah.
I think he's had a great season.
I think Ashley Young is a magnificent young footballer, and I would be happy for him to win it.
I'd really like to see him get in the England squad. It's perplexing that he isn't.
Well, he gets in the squad sometimes.
Well, yeah, but he doesn't really get near the side, does he?
Well, where are you going to play him, though, James? Who are you going to play him in the place of?
Well, I'd play him on the left, and I'd move Stevie G inside.
With Lampard?
No. I would sacrifice Frankie Lampard from the King's Road.
Yeah, but,
who's not even fat.
He could get in.
Hasn't been for many years. never misses a game, and he's probably one of the fittest athletes on the planet.
I digress.
Yeah.
Luke,
when was he fat?
He's fat. Ashley Young would play in one of those three advanced midfield / supplementary striker roles that are at the moment being filled by Gerrard, Rooney, and Lennon.
Actually, you know, I'll tell you what I'd do. I'd put him on instead of Stuart Downing.
Yeah, you could probably do that, yeah.
But that's fun.
Yeah. I don't disagree with you, to be honest. I think that, for me, it's Vidic or Giggs, and then the young player. Johnny Evans had a good season,
Thank
I think.
Thank you, that'll do.
Yeah, all right, fine.
Pete, thoughts?
Ireland, Holloway.
Yeah.
He's been magnificent, hasn't he?
He has been very, very good.
He has been good, actually, Stephen Ireland.
Yeah, he's got a tattoo of wings of an angel on his back. Yeah.
Which he thinks work, I'm pretty sure.
Barry Ferguson and Alan McGregor of Rangers have both been given life bans by the FA.
Scotsmen in alcohol abuse shocker.
Yeah. Is this for reinforcing stereotypes?
Yeah, exactly.
It's typically stern punishment, even if it is, so that falls down there.
Mm. Absolutely. This is harsh. I think very harsh. They've really...
Pete thinks it's a disgrace.
I think it was just... What were they trying to achieve there? Oh, look at us, look what we're doing, everyone. Oh, we pretend. Why don't they just do it to the camera? Why don't they just put their arms out in front of their faces?
This is them pretending to swear.
That's what they got busted for, right? Disrespectfulness on the bench.
Yeah, it wasn't so much. Yeah. I mean, obviously the drinking before the game, not directly before the game, but before the game, although other players were involved in that.
Yeah,
those players' names haven't come out as yet, but they were punished and they were put on the bench for that. Fair enough. But to kind of give sort of subtle V signs, one, that's a bit of a piss-poor protest, whatever it is.
Who's it aimed at?
Yeah. Well, I bet they thought they'd been really subversive and cool, didn't they?
But that's what...
This is like when John Lydon said shit.
and that's what's caused the uproar, is the antics that
I don't understand the punishment fully anyway, because it's a bit like, right, now you're never going to play for Scotland again, so we're punishing ourselves as well, because Barry Ferguson's actually a really good player.
Yeah.
So that's a stupid thing to do.
Well, it's an odd one. The SFA chief executive, Gordon Smith, this is a quote from him. He said, the players involved were involved in two incidents.
Two yellows make a red. And I hope the football world can understand that.
Yeah, but not forever. Not a red forever. You don't put, like, a reducer in the first minute, then pull someone's shirt in the second half and get banned forever.
But yeah. But why do they... Like, Barry Ferguson in particular came out and said, you know, I understand why they've done that and I'm sorry. Why are you saying sorry now, then? Because you've got the punishment. Tell everyone to fuck off, you know what I mean?
Now's the time to flick the V-side,
huh?
You've
got nothing to lose. Exactly. I don't understand why he's apologising for something he clearly felt that he was being hard done by with.
Well, yeah. I'm not sure what the overall consensus amongst the Scottish... the fans of Scotland, but...
Well, it's interesting you say that, because the Tartan Army spokesman Hamish Husband.
Oh, yes! Brilliant.
I've been looking forward all day to saying that to you boys. Hamish Husband has come out and...
still brilliant, second time.
And Husband said, what the players have to do is face up to the fans and admit they have both let the club and country down, which they both have.
Yeah.
And he said, so he's saying an apology and we'll take it back. But they have apologised.
Yeah. Like, but afterwards, though.
Clearly, I think the thing is with Scottish football, people think the FA and those that surround the game in England, the media and the pundits and all the rest of it, there's a bit of stuffiness. You have no idea the amount of unbelievable levels of, and I'll use that word again, stuffiness, that is north of the border. It is incredible. It's shocking. Well, and this is a prime example of this. You know?
For me, it's the wrong punishment. What needs to happen is whoever makes these decisions needs to look at McGregor and Ferguson and work out, right, are they actually sorry? If they are, okay, get the formal public apology out of the way, fine them probably, warn them on their future conduct, and then move forward.
Someone in the sort of Scottish international setup has got to step in and just say, look, this is stupid. Someone's got to take the lead. Just use a bit of diplomacy and just sort it all out. Let it all blow over. Banning them for life, or even pretending you're going to ban them for life, if that's what they're doing, it's just ludicrous.
But the coming out with the life ban is stupid, whatever happens, because if you enforce that, well, it's a ridiculous decision. If you go back on that, it shows that you're a bit incompetent.
It's just stupid.
What happens when somebody does something worse?
Exactly.
What I mean?
Yeah. Look at Ronnie Woolworth, headbutted a referee. I didn't get banned for life. We got banned for a long time, but it got overturned. You know? People have done... how is that worse? I'm not belittling what they've done, because it is disrespectful, and we all know that. Yeah. And we all agree on that. Yeah. But how is that worse than what, you know, Paolo Di Canio did to Paul Alcott, or Eric Cantona did to the Crystal Palace family? It's not worse than that.
It would be interesting to see legally what the... because presumably they signed some sort of contract for playing for their country, you know what I mean?
There must be rules and regulations and terms and conditions and stuff.
It'd be interesting to see like how shadowy that is legally, you know what I mean?
Yeah, well, exactly. It could be a human rights breach or something like that. Mm.
I love a bit of Scottish sternness. You know, I found out recently, obviously I'm Scottish, my surname's Campbell, I found out that means crooked mouth in Gaelic, and that the head of the Campbell clan traditionally lived in a castle in Scotland called Castle Gloom. I'm descended from cartoon supervillains. It's amazing.
That is good.
I found out at the week, no, a couple of days ago, actually, that I'm more Welsh than I thought.
You need to give us some context. How Welsh did you think you were? Because if you thought you were only a little bit Welsh, that's not a big story.
I thought I was only a little bit Welsh. My mum's Welsh, but my dad, turns out my great granddad's Welsh.
I've got one as well. This actually happened over the weekend. My granddad's been researching our family tree, and he found someone back about 150 years ago or something whose professional occupation was imbecile. That's true.
That's magnificent.
That's true.
Brilliant. They've picked off somebody with a ledger, haven't they?
I know what you boys are all thinking. All the pieces are falling into place now.
Ramble, we're all over the British Isles.
Yeah. Exactly.
Is where we're from.
Yeah.
I'm 100% British beef, incidentally.
Beef.
Adriano's having a bit of a mare at the moment.
Can you use his proper name, please?
What's his proper name?
The Emperor.
Oh, sorry.
That's a nickname that he gave himself.
You can't do that.
He can and he has.
Yeah, simple.
But no, that's the law. That's the rules, though, isn't it? And he's broken that.
What did he say that time, Luke?
Wasn't it like after all his like emotional problems or something, people were questioning him? And I think he came out with something on the lines of "Heavy is the head that wears the crown."
That's good. Yeah. I like him.
But I think he's got his feet on the ground.
But that's an old. I think that's an old saying anyway.
Yeah.
I think that's Shakespearean actually.
He's reportedly gone back to the favela he grew up in Rio de Janeiro. Well. And he's taken time out of football.
Has he not seen City of God?
I think he's probably watching it now.
He's in it.
The real version. But he,
that's a shame. It is a real shame because he's a talent.
He is.
Oh, he is, yeah. He said that he doesn't know whether it'll be 1, 2 or 3 months out of the game, suggesting that he's given himself 3 months there. Although, with the nature of some Brazilian players, you know, it could... could be more.
Well, doesn't Rubinho do this all the time?
Oh, yeah.
That's in Rubinho's contract, though.
They had to agree to loads of stuff to get it through before the deadline.
I can remember...
sabbaticals, yeah. All
right. I can remember about 2 months ago. Just
he goes to the
paper.
Ground on a roller coaster, yeah. Like privately built for him.
He gets 3 months' leave. He got
that from Jens Lehmann.
He's got the school holidays written into his contract.
I can remember like reading the newspaper a couple months ago in the middle of the season and just seeing like photos of the day or something and a picture of Rubinho in swimming trunks on a beach in Rio thinking, it's like Thursday. How is he? It's Thursday. There's a game on Saturday. What is he doing? Yeah. What is he doing? You know,
it's unbelievable.
It's not a short haul flight either. No. It's a good old exactly. few hours.
That's it. Well,
Rubinho's got a jetpack though, so it doesn't take as long.
That's true. Well, Adriano, he says he's not happy in Italy, and he says he wants to be in Brazil with family and friends and living in peace. He says. So his agent's come out and said that he's confident that he'll return to football, but who with? I don't know. I mean, Jose Mourinho's commented on this. Well, it's near the beach. Jose has said Inter have done everything possible to help him before.
And this has been agreed by Massimo Moratti and stuff like that, isn't it?
Jose said Inter have done everything to help him before Jose arrived and after. Since he's been there. But I've got to admire Mourinho. He says if he stops playing and becomes a happy man, then that's perfect. I've not spoken to him yet, but we... But we have to understand the reasons for what he said. We'll see.
What do you think about it?
Mourinho saying that,
I think that, to be honest, all joking aside, and Adriano is a bit of a character, he's a magnificent footballer as well.
He's had a lot of problems.
He's reportedly got a big alcohol problem.
That's right.
Let's not pretend that just because he's a professional footballer, he hasn't got mental problems or health problems or alcohol addiction. Anything like that. I mean, I don't know what the ins and outs of it are, but I mean, it's a sad story. There's no doubt about that, you know. And football, like any other discipline, is littered with people who have fallen by the wayside with problems before. So. Hopefully, he'll get well soon.
It'd be nice to see him actually, if he's that unhappy in Italy, move back to a club in Brazil, because that's one of the things that's a real shame about the South American football, that the players leave so early and they're big stars.
Right. These days they do, definitely.
He's a real big player, Adriano, and if he could go back to Brazil, that'd be a real coup for their league, and I'd like to see that happen.
Totally. I think, Ronaldo, as in obviously Brazilian Ronaldo, came out and said recently
back
that...
Back among the goals, isn't he?
Well, absolutely.
He's an absolute machine.
Can't keep a good man down. Yeah. Ronaldo came out and said recently that Brazilian players don't care about playing for European clubs. The only thing they care about is money, and hence they have to move to Europe to do it, or to get it. And the only side they really care about playing for is Brazil.
You can't speak for every single Brazilian player, whoever you are.
No, but I think there is a bit of truth in that. I mean, the only exception at the moment is a young Brazilian like superstar called Hernandez, who's elected to stay in Brazil, and he sort of turned down all the overtures of all the big European clubs to sign a new contract at his current club. And
he's playing in Sao Paulo, maybe.
Yeah, that's right. But apart from that, they do all go really early because
they do. But there's just a distinct lack of money in the game. You know, the Brazilian clubs want to.
But I don't think it's just happening in South America. I think it's happening all over the place. I think if you look at Kiko Marquedo, who now plays obviously at United, he was poached from Lazio at like 15.
Sergio Fabregas is from Barcelona.
Yeah,
as well.
Exactly. Because in Europe you can't sign professional terms till you're 18, but in Britain you can do it when you're 16.
Yeah, I think David Dean actually had something to do with that piece of
that needs to change. That needs to be done across the board to the age of 21, in my opinion.
But going back to Brazil, I think it would be nice to see Adriano and a few of these big names staying in Brazil and getting more coverage of their league, more local stuff, because I mean Tim Vickery writes a very good blog for the BBC website. And
World Football as well, he does.
I mean, he's often saying that there's so many people in Brazil. Some clubs are well supported, but sometimes you know you'll see like too many Chelsea kits or Man United kits in the street. And this is Brazil, you know. It's a shame.
It's a real shame. Yeah. And I can't think of anything. To be honest, for me, and it's probably like I say, it's probably part of a larger sort of argument. There's nothing to stop. As long as it's agreed across the board, players should be contracted to their clubs till so they're 21 years old, when they can develop within the club sort of that they've grown up with. There's no need for... I mean, OK, so it might work out for Marqueda, who goes to United at the age of 15 or 16 from Lazio or something, and that's fine, it's worked out for him.
I think he only come in January or something like that?
Yeah, but my point is, how many players are there that have been poached? Because, I mean, I read an article that David James wrote, which he writes in The Observer, and he said that, you know, at Portsmouth, this is Portsmouth, not one of the world's biggest clubs, they've got about 115 or 120 under-9s on their books. You know, how many of those, and what they're doing, and the bigger clubs are even worse. So haven't Liverpool got like 65 professional players in their first team? They've got so many players, they're hoarding them from all over the place in the hope that you chuck enough shit to a wall and enough, some of it sticks. Yeah. You know what I mean? That can't be good for the game, I don't think.
No, definitely not.
These it creates this the kind of the top heavy balance we've got at the moment where the big four are the regimented big four, and it doesn't really change that much.
But I sincerely hope that Adriano does come back to football because he is a good talent. And
I'd love to have seen him rip
He's a lovely little talent.
I'd love to have seen him rip Man United apart. It should be awesome.
Yeah, so but it would be nice to see him playing and in his native Brazil.
Well, the thing is,
he's 27 and
27. I thought he's older than that.
No, 27, and for a top player to be playing in his prime back in Brazil, that's what I like.
Well, it makes you wonder. He's actually pretty good now. If he had his, if he had his head on, how good would he be? Do you know what I mean?
I think also one of the.
Do you remember when Inter absolutely destroyed Valencia in the Champions League a few seasons ago? And Adriano was phenomenal.
There was a massive fight.
I was going to say, I don't know when you said destroyed them.
It was actually literally destroyed them.
He is a big bloke. He is a big bloke.
He's, what has happened to Adriano is he's struggled under not ever being able to live up to his reputation on Pro Evo. Where he's absolutely amazing.
He's pretty good.
On the anniversary, Hillsborough, I think. It was good to see Liverpool win quite comfortably at home at Anfield.
Belter from Torres, wasn't it?
Yeah,
that was a nice touch by Torres. He dedicated it to the victims and stuff, didn't he?
Yeah.
And I think it is important to remember how that sort of event, and it was a disastrous event, obviously.
Of course.
How it changed football in terms of how crowds are managed and how people saw the game.
Drastically changed.
And it is important, especially on the 20th anniversary, to remember. I mean, I think there is a tendency in football to have minute silences for lots of different things, where do you draw the line, sort of thing. But I think Hillsborough was a football tragedy, and it was within the realm of the game, so it's important to remember it, and also important to pay respects to the victims of that disaster. So, and for them to win 4-0 and Torres, who is probably who I think it's fair to say the Kop have really taken to as well.
He's the sort of current talisman aside from Steven Gerrard.
And I do think, I mean, regardless of people do, I mean, it has been said that people think that, you know, the residents of Liverpool have got a sort of a victim complex, that sort of stuff. But to be fair, Steven Gerrard's cousin was killed in that disaster.
It is
very close to the club. It's not, it's not like, oh, they're dining out on it for any reason. There would be no reason to do that.
I think nearly 100 people died for crime.
Oh, absolutely.
I think the big tragedy is that, you know what I mean, it's the same year that pretty much the same thing happened in the Ivory Coast. You know, match. You know what I mean?
Some of the tributes at the time were really nice as well. It was an AC Milan game, wasn't it? I forget who they were playing. It was in Europe.
Yeah, it was in Europe.
And there was a minute's silence, and the fans broke out into a chorus of "You'll Never Walk Alone."
Yeah, that was incredible.
Which is great. And I mean, there's a culture abroad of clapping for a minute rather than doing silence.
Yeah.
So it isn't as disrespectful as it might sound to sort of break into song during a minute's silence. And at the time in Merseyside, they tied Everton and Liverpool scarves together between Goodison Park and Anfield, which is a real sort of nice show of solidarity as well.
Yeah. I think that's one of the goals of the season, though, that Torres did score on the first
one. Isn't that Angles?
And then Agger's goal afterwards as well.
That was a belter, wasn't it?
He's got a dinger on him, Agger has.
He's got a dinger.
Fabio Aurelio's like that as well. Liverpool got a lot of players like that. And Xabi Alonso's got a habit of scoring from
Riera.
Before the halfway line.
Yeah.
Stevie G's hit one or two in his time.
Skirtle. Got a good shot on him.
Well, he does. Yeah, that's true. They all have. Rainer's got a ping on him.
Silence doesn't speak volumes because he does.
That's true. You're right and we're all wrong.
Roy Hodgson said that, referencing obviously Fulham are very close to a European spot, he says that they're not ready for Europe.
Europe isn't ready for Fulham. That's
what Al Fayed said. That's what Hodgson said. And he kind of suggested that there's a number of clubs that would be quite happy for just a mid-table finish because they don't have the squads to cope with the UEFA Cup as well as the league.
Look at Bolton when they were in Europe and basically just decided to just sack it off.
Villa.
I mean, Villa have got a really small squad. Kind of makes sense. But it
kind of begs the question. I mean, surely then the UEFA Cup spot should be handed out to the team who fancies it. Do you know what I mean?
I've had a point about small squads and stuff. I mean, really, it's like entering a competition, winning the prize, like a car, and saying, oh no, I've not got time to drive this. I don't want it.
Yeah.
You've worked to get there. Yeah. Enjoy it.
Yeah. Spend your whole season sort of fighting for it than only for it to become like a... Oh, actually, this is a bit of a pain in the arse, isn't it?
It all comes
we might not qualify for the UEFA Cup again if we stay in the UEFA Cup.
They'll accept the money, you know what I mean?
Well, I think in Bolton's case, it comes down to... I'm not sure if they're properly assured of their Premiership safety.
Yeah.
It all comes back to money again.
Yeah.
If any team pretty much drops out of the Premier League now, it's disastrous. So that has to take priority over everything else.
Look at Southampton.
Well, exactly. There's countless examples, aren't there? I mean, if any of those teams... Maybe not West Brom, but I mean, if Middlesbrough or Portsmouth fell out of the Premier League, that would have been an absolute disaster. So they have to prioritise that, don't they?
Disaster has struck at Luton Town.
Sickening.
It's horrible.
They've gone. And it's without surprise.
No, it was always going to happen, I think. But, I mean, you've got to ask yourself, who are the... we've said it before, but it's worth saying again because it's happened this weekend. Who are the FA trying to punish here?
Yeah.
These faceless directors who haven't even been put in the public domain, no one even knows who they are. No one went out on public record and said what exactly went on. They were just slapped with 30 points. And now these people who were directors are now sort of swanning around scot-free somewhere. No, they don't care. No, what do they care about? They've not been struck off the list of being a director at a company again or anything like that. And it's the fans who suffer, isn't it?
I thought the Luton chairman, Nick Owen, made a good point. When he said, you know, well, we should be comfortably mid-table, and they said that, you know, starting with that points deduction affects the way you play.
Yeah.
Massively.
But you've got to go out and win every game.
Well, of course. But he pointed to, I mean, it was great to see them win the Johnston's Paint Trophy.
Yeah.
And he said that that's proof that there's enough quality, you know, we shouldn't be down there. This is just an awful decision.
Well, the club captain came out and said he's going to try and persuade as many players as he can to stay. He said they're going to try and bounce straight back. I think if the FA put themselves in a position where they could properly vet and judge whether people were, you know, qualified and financially solvent enough and had the business acumen to own a football club and run one in the first place, then this would never happen.
Well, the current manager, Mick Harford's saying that he's blaming the previous regime, which, of course...
Well, that's... Yeah, absolutely right. Mick Harford's done a brilliant job.
Yeah, I mean, he was also quoted as saying the benchmark is Doncaster Rovers. They went down a few years ago, came back up, and now they're in the Championship with the new stadium, doing pretty well.
Well, I think Luton will bounce back, but you've got to look at clubs like Oxford, who've really, really struggled to come back up.
But once again, just going on a previous point you made, if there is indeed a fit and proper persons test, like we're told there is so many times, why the bloody hell is it so easy to get past?
Well, something basic like, have you got the money you say you've got? If you have, that would solve a lot of the problems. Oxford United is another example. They went down to the conference because they were run by an idiot. A guy who was lining his own pockets with the money from the club, allegedly, you know. So, and they've never recovered from that. You know, Jim Smith went back there, who's, you know, a really great sort of ambassador of the game and a lot of experience, and he couldn't save them, you know. So,
I mean, the whole idea of somebody being a wealthy person has very much changed. If you look at somebody's like the Times Rich List or something, the amount of money that makes you a rich and wealthy person is very different now because, you know, they don't factor in things like debts and
assets and how much,
you know, it's like sort of saying, oh, I'm a really rich man because I've got a £1 million house if I've got a mortgage on it, you know what I mean?
It's made out of coins. Yeah. It just doesn't work like that.
I just think that they also, the administration thing, I went into administration like 3 times in a row or something, but the other 10 points was for like late paperwork or something.
Yeah.
Stupid.
You shouldn't get points deducted over something as trivial as that.
Well, the FA have also completely bottled it with Southampton. They've not made a decision. They've deferred a decision over their parent holding company on whether to dock them 10 points. Now, I'm not...
That doesn't do anyone any favours, does it? Southampton are in complete limbo now.
It's like fucking tax returns.
Yeah. Listen, I just feel for the person who goes... You know, I don't know, who goes to Luton home and away every game and now hasn't got a league club to support. A club that's been in a member of the league for God knows how many years.
Yeah, well, they were in the top flight.
20 years ago, they won the league cup.
I think, yeah.
They won the league cup in 88, didn't they? So they've got pedigree. They've just been run into the ground by incompetent people. And now the fans and the people at the club now are suffering for it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's absolutely... remarkable. It's genuinely staggering.
Well, I think we all sincerely hope that they get back up into the Football League.
Well, I mean, if you can draw any positives from it, you can draw the fact that, you know, they've had increased exposure and maybe a lot of people who were from the era may go and watch them a little bit more now and show them some support. But, you know, we'll keep our fingers crossed for them, I suppose. People from the internet.
Not bad.
I think I was being judged.
You're always being judged, Moore.
Yeah, that's true, actually.
You reap what you sow.
Only God can judge me, yeah?
Mm.
Good day, chaps. Nearly. At the recent Bolton-Middlesbrough game, I witnessed something that changed my life.
Really?
Wow.
It is with a
it's
sad...
like it wasn't to do with the game.
No.
It is with a sad heart that I have to admit that in my 20 years of following Bolton, I'm yet to touch the match ball. It's for these reasons that I draw your attention to what happened that day. On three separate occasions, the ball came my way. Each time, my hopes were raised that I'd finally break my duck, but of course, the ball eluded me every time. But what was amazing, that on each occasion, the ball went exactly in the same place in the Lower East Stand. And on each occasion, the same middle-aged, grey-haired bloke stood calmly and headed the ball back on the pitch before taking his seat as if nothing happened at all.
Three times in a row, it's pretty good.
Just got up there, boom, headed it straight back. What are the chances of that?
It's the same one like Andrew Flintoff used to hit sixes to his dad in the crowd. Is maybe right? He was the dad of, like, Gary Cahill or something.
Yeah. It was an unbelievable moment, and I wanted to share it with you. That's from Chris.
Thanks very much.
Thanks for that, nice Chris. One. Has anybody here touched a match ball?
No.
I've never.
Has anyone here been to a match? No. I don't. I think one time I tried to stop Vinnie Jones taking a throw-in.
Did you stand in front of him?
Because no, people around me with the ball.
Yeah.
And I was like, I was just young, being an idiot. And I was about 12 or something. And yeah. I was like, oh, don't give him the ball back, don't give him the ball back. And then Vinnie Jones came like quite close and I got a little bit scared.
Give him the ball back.
No, I didn't say anything, but he gave him the ball. But I've never touched it, no.
I volleyed the ball once at Hartlepool United. Obviously, there's a lot more room when the terrace is half empty. But yeah. But you do have a very famous resident of the town end in Hartlepool. I think he got banned for assaulting someone, as I recall. So he used to sneak in the away end. His name was Lawrence, he was a transvestite, and he would come in with boots and skirt.
Not football boots?
No. A lady's brogue, and she'd come in and... he would come in with a Crystal Palace shirt as well. He's a cockney fella. I don't know, he's a cockney fella. He just like...
He's mentally ill,
he laughed like... Yeah, I have no doubt in my mind that is the case. But he did... I really remember, it was a really... Pete Beardsley was playing for Hartlepool. He was taking shots at a young... young second keeper, and the keeper tipped over the bar just before the first half started. And this little kid picked it up and was about to throw it back to... the heroic Peter Beardsley, and Lawrence, the transvestite, wrestled it from a 5-year-old child and went, ah! And then kicked it back, like, well, it just went miles, to be honest.
I get Lawrence on the show. Lawrence, he sounds awesome.
If you get on YouTube, type in Lawrence Hartlepool, you'll see him. He's a bit of a local colour, so to speak.
Mm. At QPR, they've got a guy, he's about 60, who wears a cowboy hat. A massive sombrero.
Yeah.
And he's got his hooter thing. And he's right near the away fans, and all the away fans just abuse him all game. But he loves it. He gets up all the time, blows his horn, and, like, dances around. I think he might be mentally ill.
When you go to Pompey, you take a bell with you, don't you?
Oh, yeah, I do, yeah. And that's my dad. My dad.
Okay, next email. Hello, lads. Have any of you seen the recent game where Palermas of Brazil changed shirt sponsors at half time? I'm not sure if it was a weird promotional tactic or anything.
What?
Love to your mother's, Matt.
No.
Palmeiras, was that?
Doesn't surprise me.
Sorry, what did I say?
I don't know.
Since I made up with
Palmeiras.
Well, I did not see that, no.
Is it Stoke that don't have one this year?
It's West Brom, isn't it? Because they just couldn't find one as well.
Really? Not even for like a tenner. It's a tenner. A tenner's a tenner.
Yeah. The football ramble, we could have been on there.
I will Sharpie the football ramble on 100 shirts.
Yeah, yeah.
They won't all look nice.
We'll draw it on and we'll pay them a tenner, but it's a tenner they wouldn't have had.
Yeah. Tell you something. Greetings, Ramblers. I write to you through the medium of electronic email from the faraway land of Toronto. Oh. Once again, proving we're international.
Yeah, man.
Where I emigrated to from Dublin at the start of the year. Naturally, my appreciation towards the Ramble has since grown immensely as my exposure to soccer ball has drastically decreased since my arrival.
If you're taking our show as your main football news source, I would...
Carry on.
Shame
on you. Don't listen to him. Carry on.
Shame on you.
Worry for you.
Now, here's the thing. I write to you posing a question. As leader of your fantasy football league...
Oh, OK. Oh.
Yes.
Oh, by the way, I'm winning that of us four.
Yeah,
this
I haven't checked my
This
mind.
Is
I
the email, certainly
down
not
the table.
I know the importance of placing the captain's armband on someone who is likely to gain the most points for my team that week. However, never in a month of Sundays would I let Ronaldo lead out my team in real life. I ask you all then, who do you think the Premier League's best captain
William
is?
William Gallas.
Right, that's not a serious answer. and Colm here is asking for a serious answer.
Okay.
Okay, So don't disrespect the blooming top of the league.
Steven Gerrard, probably.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, it's boring to say. He leads them. He is boring to say, but he leads them so well, and they do look to him. He's sort of more influential as an individual player than sort of any other one player.
He's one of the worst England captains, but he's the best. He's best captain in the Premier League, probably, I'd say.
Peter.
No, I'm with him on that, to be honest. He's never anonymous. Never.
Sol Campbell. Sol Campbell.
Fades out the game at all.
John Terry's got to be worth mentioning. England captain as well, apparently.
Who?
Terry John.
Oh, Terry John.
I'll tell John.
Yeah. John Terry Butcher. I know.
I apologise, Colm. Nothing out of the ordinary there.
Well, let's just think about it for a minute then.
That's what we're all here to do.
Ian Ashby deserves a shout because he's captained Hull from, like, right when they were down Robin. In the lower leagues, isn't he?
Okay,
and he's been their captain the whole time. Brilliant. So, yeah, let's go for Ian Ashby.
We're
it's
having
a lot
Ian
more
Ashby.
Romantic.
Well done, James.
Michael Owen at Newcastle?
There it is.
Inspirational. Inspirational.
Before he left.
Yeah, all that.
Ian Ashby's a cracking shout, James. Well done to you.
Thank you.
Yeah, and to Colm.
Yeah, good email. Thanks for that.
And now it's James or Jim time.
Right, I've got some hilarious stories from the world of football.
Oh, thank goodness.
A referee ordered a penalty to be retaken in a Sunday League football game when an opposition player broke wind as the ball was kicked. The Chilton Villa player got a yellow card for the noise, which was classed as unsporting behaviour. I love how sort of non-league teams sound like they're from Warbury Warriors teams, or whatever it's called, Striker or Roy of the Rovers. It's grand. The team, who conceded a goal on the second take, went on to win the match 6-4 against International Manchester FC at Turnmoss in Stretford, Manchester.
That's a crazy name for
that's another break-off of FC United.
Yeah,
my team I played for was Cornwall Rangers.
We're called Perfidious Albion. I'm not really sure what perfidious means either.
Yeah.
Cool. Villa manager Ian Treadwell said their conduct was normally exemplary. One of our players broke wind and only the referee heard it and he booked the player, he said. The other player had the penalty saved because it was a bad penalty. It was nothing to do with any noise. They were as shocked as we were as to why. Mr Treadwell said he was waiting for the Football Association to contact them after it had received the report. They were fined £97.
James, this all stinks.
We're not a dirty team and we like to play football. While I won't condone the actions of the players, I've said it. It is an emotive game and some of the players were sent off for entering into conversation with the referee. This has come at a bad time in the season as we don't have a sponsor. We're looking for a new sponsor for next season. We'll sponsor you. Except we won't, because we're sponsoring West Brom now.
Yeah, we haven't got any money anyway.
Secretary and Treasurer of International Manchester FC said both teams were very friendly. There's no animosity. It was just hilarious, she said.
They need to have clear the air talk. Chill that one up, Jimbo. That's Lukey Moore one. Everyone else nil.
So we're going around the world now, as we like to South Africa, which is how you pronounce it.
South Africa.
The South African FA is continuing its investigations into recent Vodacom second division results after suspending the match officials involved in Namaqua Stars' 15-0 win over Kakamas Cosmos and Real Madrid's, obviously a different Real Madrid, their 26-2 victory against Young Tigers. Ridiculous. Unless they were actually just Tiger Cubs.
Young Tigers. Sure,
they could quite easily get a win.
I love those scores. 50-0, but 26-2.
Yeah.
Where did the two come from?
Because it's obviously a fix, and they don't want the people to pick up the scent.
Okay. Yeah. I reckon those two definitely came from set plays.
You thought so, yeah.
The Madrid game was further marred by the three appointed officials failing to turn up because the referee didn't give the two linesmen a lift from Dea Air, however you pronounce that, where they live. Quite by chance, three alternative officials happened to be at the stadium in Kimberley, where the match was being played. Being accredited referees, they stepped into the breach. These officials and the referee who was to have officiated in the first place have been suspended by the local association. I'm still none the wiser, admitted SAFA suit Steve Goddard. It's true that all six officials have been suspended. However, to get to the bottom of the story is not quite that simple. You need to dig deep into an abyss which is big.
Oh, I love that sentence. That's awesome. Yeah, that is awesome. The thing is, I'm not sure. I'm no expert in match fixing or anything like that. But let me just say something.
What a claim.
Presumably, if you're a referee and you're going to fix a game and you've got it in and you've sorted it out with the team and the captain, why are you fixing a game for the most ridiculously attention-grabbing scoreline? Why don't you fix it at like 2-0?
It's like they've not understood the concept of why they're fixing it.
No.
It's just like, why would I be subtle? I did a brilliant job. It was 15-0. Yeah. Did you see how I fixed it?
No way.
Why are the police here?
Is that why the police... What are you going to fix it at? I was thinking maybe if we all back a 3-0 win and you make it 3-0. Nah. 50-0. No!
I'll show you how good I am at fixing games.
50-0, no.
Okay, so we're off to South America. Guess what? Something stupid's happened.
Yes.
Yeah.
My South
well done,
American
Pete. South American what?
Jingle machine.
South American what?
Jingle machine.
Pedro Santilli, a former assistant coach for Brazil's national team, no less, boys,
big boy,
found
big boy.
Himself in trouble during the match that led to his team Commercial's relegation to the third division of the Sao Paulo State Championship. Commercial were losing 1-0 to Catanduvense, I think that's pronounced. When Santilli entered the field to remove a ball which was out of play in an attempt to speed up play. And on his way back to the bench, he shoved an opposing player into the ground, which makes it sound like he fucking threw him down a grave.
He shoved him into the ground.
After referee Flavio Rodriguez de Souza ejected Santilli, the coach once again charged onto the field, arguing with Souza before completely losing his cool and delivering a right-handed punch to the referee's chin. The referee then moved out of the way and players quickly arrived to escort Santilli off the field. Santilli reportedly said after the match that he regretted his actions and wanted to apologise to the referee. Brilliant.
This man's been involved in the Brazilian national team coaching stuff.
That is like Brian Kidd punching Mike Dean in the face.
Yeah.
By the way, there's a disclaimer, there's no suspicion that he's ever done anything like that. So
he's wanted to, though, Luke.
I like it how he was escorted off the pitch by the players. He smacks the referee and everyone's like, oh, poor Santilli. Come on, you've had a busy day.
What is he doing?
Ladies and gentlemen, it's profile time. And thank you. This week, we're putting in a whole team. One of the reasons why we're putting in this whole team is they're quite unique. Let me bring to the table Athletic Bilbao.
Welcome in.
Yeah. Not yet.
Hello,
not yet.
Fellas.
All of them welcome.
Peter in the doorway.
They won't want to come in unless we're all Basque.
Well, maybe we are.
Unless maybe we could all wear a Basque.
Yeah. Right. That's fine.
Naughty.
They are, as Luke quite rightly interrupted with, they are a Spanish Basque football club from Bilbao in Biscay. And they're known as the Rojo y Blancos because of their red and white strip. The club is very well known for its cantera policy of bringing up young Basque players through the ranks, as well as recruiting some top Basque players, such as...
Echeverria.
Yes. And
Martinez.
Yeah, good stuff. They only sign professional players native to one of the seven Basque provinces. However, in recent times, they have signed players born which have been very, very close to the Basque country, so slightly further.
They're branching out.
Yeah. Very, very slightly.
Even still, that's quite...
Quite interesting.
Well, absolutely, and this has gained both admirers and critics, but they have been praised for promoting homegrown players and obviously club loyalty as well. But let's start at the beginning, when football was introduced to Bilbao by British steel and shipyard workers. And also Basque students would go to Britain to learn about engineering and so on, and they would learn football over there and then bring it back. In the late 1800s, Bilbao, obviously a port, had attracted many migrant workers. Whoop. And the workers came together and formed Bilbao Football Club. However, when the students, the Basque students from Britain came back to Bilbao, they set up a side called Athletic Club. In 1902, the two clubs formed Club Vizcaya. However, the two clubs eventually became Atletico Club de Bilbao. But in the same year, the Basque students in Madrid, who went to move there, formed Athletic Club de Madrid, who later became Atletico Madrid.
It's all linked.
Exactly. And in 1921, that's when they became Atletico Madrid, completely independent.
We're not talking about them.
No, we're not. Let's get back to Athletic Bilbao. And they were called Athletic Bilbao, not Atletico Bilbao, because of the British influence.
We get everywhere, don't we, eh?
We do, yeah. Not putting O's on the end of words.
No. Who do we think we are?
The first colours of the side of Athletic Bilbao were blue and white stripes, but in 1910 they switched to red and white stripes. Some people suggest it was because of the Sunderland or even a Southampton influence. However, apparently the most credible theory is because red and white striped tops were the cheapest, they used them.
Oh, right. Why were they cheaper than the others?
They were cheaper than the others because it was the same combination used to make bed mattresses.
Aren't Atletico Madrid name as something like the... nicknamed something like the mattress makers or
they
something
are
really
indeed,
weird like
James.
That.
James, that is
good.
You
knowledge.
Cannot
wow.
buy that sort of thing. That's magnificent.
I wondered what that was.
Yeah, very good. Very good indeed. They're also one of the few clubs, if we bring it more slightly up to date for a brief moment, who don't have the logo of an official sponsor on their kit.
Yeah. Well, Barcelona didn't used to do that until UNICEF came along, didn't they?
That's right, yeah.
And West Brom.
Mm. One of Bilbao's famous goal scorers, Pichichi, which was way back in the kind of 1914 to 1916 period,
The La Liga Top Scorer Award is declared the Pichichi Award in his honour.
Cool.
Yeah, so one of the former players has contributed to history.
Mm.
Another one of their famous sons was a chap called Zara, and he made his debut in the 41 season. And he scored, he was famed for scoring 38 goals in the 1950-1951 season, a record that still stands.
Today.
Wow. Mm. Not bad.
So he would have won the Pichichi Award.
Yeah.
I've never heard of this guy, but he does sound like a good player, doesn't he?
Yeah.
In the 1930s, 40s and 50s, there were strict limits imposed on foreign players, and this was obviously to the benefit of Bilbao. But in the 60s, when there was a little bit more flexibility, Real Madrid and Barcelona were getting the likes of Di Stefano and Puskas, and Bilbao kind of slipped down the pecking order.
Yeah.
In 1981, Javier Clemente came in as manager, and that was their most successful period. And they actually won La Liga in 1983-1984 season. But unfortunately, since Clemente, they have never won a major trophy. It's also interesting to note that Howard Kendall once managed Athletic Bilbao.
Yeah, I heard that.
That's very odd, isn't it?
Yeah.
When Luis Fernandez took over at the club in 1996, he had a bit of success, came second in the Liga and got Champions League qualification. But he benefited from the club adopting a slightly more flexible approach to their policy, because now anybody could play for Athletic Bilbao as long as they acquired their skills in the Basque country.
It must be difficult for a manager, but especially these days, because you are really limited. You must have to have a completely different mindset.
Yeah,
completely. You mean there would be no point having a massive scouting network.
It's like being an international manager, where you've got to pay for some players.
That's right. That's exactly it. Yeah, there's no point having scouts all around the place, because he's not going to use them, are you?
Just incomparable.
Yeah, it is.
Well, Vicente Lizarazu, he was the first French-born Basque to play for the club. He didn't stay there very long. So
he was a good player.
Yeah, very good player. They've attracted a few good players. My personal favourite player for them in recent years has been Julen Guerrero.
Oh, yeah.
Who was a real good playmaker. 372 appearances for them and 101 goals. And
he played a lot for Spain as well,
didn't he? He played 41 times for Spain and scored 13 goals. 93-94 Spanish Player of the Year. He attracted interest from Real Madrid, Barcelona, Lazio, Juventus, Manchester United, but he remained loyal to Bilbao and signed a 10-year contract in 95, and he was it was the longest contract in the club's history. And it just shows that the passion that people have around that club.
In many clubs' history, I imagine. 10 years, Jesus.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And despite their lack of on-field success, supporters think that their identity as the big side from the Basque regions is much more important than winning trophies.
Right.
A survey done in the 90s said that 76% of Bilbao fans would rather see the club relegated than to give up their policy.
It's incredible. It's a real, real strong feeling around there. I remember reading something about when John Aldridge played for Real Sociedad.
Oh, yeah.
And there were banners up. Yeah, they're another Basque side. There were banners up, he said, saying... foreigners not welcome. The Basque region is not Spain. It's really, really
big. It's big.
They've had a Basque national side as well.
They have. I think. Guerrero played for them as well. Also, I mean, I think that they're probably one of the sides who maybe aren't recognised by FIFA.
Yeah.
Hence, he's played for both of them. Otherwise,
he would be able
that
to.
Wouldn't be able to exactly.
Aren't they getting a sponsor now? Which is basically a word for the Basque region.
Yeah, pretty much their government is pretty much sponsoring the side. Yeah.
Wow.
So it'll be interesting to see what happens there. In recent seasons, they've not fared too well, and they've nearly got relegated. In the 2006-2007 season, it was on the last day that they managed to survive. But interestingly enough, they've played in the top flight of Spain since La Liga started in 1928. Every year. They've played in La Liga.
Yeah,
never
absolutely.
Been relegated. And with a policy like that, I mean, that is an incredible...
It's to be applauded, absolutely. Especially these days when there's money awash in the game everywhere.
Completely, yeah. Well, this season...
They're probably going to be OK, aren't they? They're about 4 or 5 points off relegation or something.
But they are in the final of the Copa del Rey next month against Barcelona.
Well, wish them all the best.
Absolutely.
But we all like Barcelona as well, yeah. So split loyalty.
It's an interesting game.
Yeah.
They're also moving to a new stadium... possibly around 2013. But their stadium at the moment is actually quite a British-style one. I don't know if you've seen it. It's quite a bit more of a kind of a rectangular, squarey type structure right on top of the pitch. So maybe influence from the miners from the northeast there. Maybe they built it.
I'd like to think so, Marcus.
For the record, they didn't.
I like to think that they exclusively chose Basque players just to get rid of any semblance of Jordi or Sunderland sort of...
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll play for you. No, no,
we are chucking the baby out with the bathwater. We cannot gladly risk this happening. We've heard of a bloke called Mike Ashley, and we don't want him anywhere near our club.
Yeah. So there we are. I thought we'd get you Bill Bowen because they have such a unique policy that's different from pretty much any other club, I'd imagine.
I think it makes the Dean Windass Hall of Fame a much more interesting place, Marcus. Yeah, so well done to you and to them.
In they come, Dean Windass Hall of Fame. Woo! A whole Spanish / Basque side in there.
Brian Clough will be turning his grave.
Turning in his rave.
Yeah. Hey, shit house.
Feel the beat, young man.
Hey, young man, I don't like this handbag house rubbish. I'm a techno man. Shit house.
Well, that's the end of the show, everybody. I hope you enjoyed it. If you'd like to get in contact with us, our email address is podcast@thefootballramble.com. We have a myspace.com/footballramble. We have a group on Facebook, so why not join that? We're on Twitter, we're on Last.fm, and we have our website, which is thefootballramble.com. But before we go, producer Pete has a very important announcement.
Yes, thank you, Marcus. because there's...
Mr. Radio.
We're changing up re-upping, if you've seen The Wire. We're changing up our hosting providers for the podcast. So if you have any problems, this podcast should be fine. But when the next one comes out on the 2nd of May, if you have any problems at all getting the new episode by, you know, it'll be up on the Saturday at some point. Just simply go to thefootballramble.com and that will give you a place to resubscribe. If you're on iTunes, it shouldn't be a problem. But if there is, thefootballramble.com is your first and last port of call.
And that is for the one that will be coming out 2nd of May.
Yeah.
So not this one. Obviously.
Well, presumably if you've heard this one, you're already listening to it.
Yeah.
The one after this one that you've just heard.
If you're on iTunes, you should be fine. If not, for whatever reason, if you listen, just download it manually.
Or come round one of our houses and we'll give it to you in person.
Mm. Yes.
Say goodbye, James or Jim.
Bye.
Say goodbye, Pete.
Bye.
And goodbye, Luke.
Goodbye, Luke.
We're all off to pass wind at referee. Ta-ta.
Bye.
Bye.